Welcome back to The Roundtable. I'm Sarah LaDuke. This Wonderful Life, a one-man stage adaptation of Frank Capra's classic 1946 film, It's a Wonderful Life, is running at Capitol Repertory Theater in Albany, New York through December 22nd. The play is directed by Maggie Mancinelli Cahill and stars Larry Daggett as, well, everyone in Bedford Falls, including but not limited to George Bailey and his whole family, Mr. Potter, and of course, Clarence the Angel. Maggie Mancinelli Cahill and Larry Daggett join us now. Thank you both for being here.
Our
Thank
pleasure.
You.
Thank you.
Maggie, we'll start with you. What made you want to do this show at Cap Rep?
Well, you know, I love plays about redemption. I love plays where people get second chances, and I love plays about transformation. And so because the play, of course, is based on Frank Capra's It's a Wonderful Life, and George Bailey gets an opportunity to live his life over, or because of how he has, you know, seen what life would like be life without him, I just love it that he gets a shot at that. And it makes me think, oh, gee, Maggie, you can change. Those things that you did, you can make up for them now. So these kind of stories give me a lot of hope. And it's the kind of thing that I really like telling.
This is a one-man version adaptation of the classic Capra film. How did you find out about the script?
Well, I was looking, and I had seen the musical of It's a Wonderful Life, and I decided that I would prefer it if it was being done in a play form, and it was being done in a radio play form. And I read it, and I liked it okay, but then I started reading about a couple of actors and one who I knew who had played this and done the story, and that was Larry. And so I called him, and I said, how did this go when you did it down at the Cape May Theater? And he said, pretty good, you know. How's your Jimmy Stewart? And he goes, pretty good, you know. So and I said, how's your Donna Reed? And he said, not bad. So at any rate, so I thought that it had, there was something fun about it that I just, it tickled me. And so I learned more about it that way.
And Larry, how did you first discover this adaptation and what made you want to do it?
Well, I have done the radio version before, and I had worked at another theater doing a production of Souvenir, and they asked me to come in and do this show last year. So that's how I ended up doing it, because I just had worked at that theater, and I knew that artistic director before that. And so we did it, but that was a totally different experience. That's a very small theater. This production here has a lot more sound cues. There's video cues. There's light cues. There's over 300 cues in the show itself.
I bet.
So it's not really a one-person show. There's about 10 people. Just me, and there's all the people backstage and in the booth. So they all add. We're all working in this very much together, and our stage manager, Ashley Dumas, is fantastic. So I hope that when people come to see it, that they become aware of also what's going on around them and behind them, because they're just as much a part of this as I am.
That is incredibly gracious of you to immediately announce that, but still you're doing a lot of work.
It's a lot of work. The thing is that you want to keep the story moving forward. There's about 25% of the people in the audience that don't know the film, that have never seen it. And another 25% or so that have seen parts of it. And I've asked them, I said, how is it you've only seen parts of this? And they said, well, it's always showing on Christmas Day, and that's when I'm cooking dinner.
Mm-hmm.
So in between the turkey and the stuffing and the peas and the carrots that I'm cooking, when I come back into the living room, it's on. So I've seen bits and pieces, but I've never seen the movie all the way through. And this is the first time having seen this show that they understand what the whole story is and the themes of the story, the themes of redemption that Maggie was talking about.
This script does call for you to evoke the famous actors that we're familiar with from the film.
Yes, it does. There's a lot of Jimmy Stewart in the whole thing. And then there's Lionel Barrymore, too. Mr. Bailey, have you put any real pressure on those people of yours to pay their mortgages? There's a lot of that. And there's Donna Reed. And there's a lot of ancillary characters, too. The most important ones, you try to stick to their main voice. But when you start to get out to character number 35 or number 36, because there's 36 people in the show, you have to make sure that each voice is different enough for the audience to be able to identify who is speaking at that time. So some of them become very broad. Some of them are right down the middle. I try to keep Jimmy right down the middle, along with Lionel Barrymore, right down the middle as far as how they sounded in the film. But some of the other ones, if I don't make them distinct, the audience will get confused.
Is keeping track of the voices the most difficult part of performing the show?
No. the most difficult part of the performing the show, on top of the voice and on top of the physical characterization for each voice, which sometimes you have to do the physical to get the voice.
Mm-hmm.
I've mentioned this to Maggie before, and it's something that most people don't think about. The most difficult thing is something that you never think about in real life. Right now, I'm looking at you in your eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Now, if you were 3 feet shorter, I'd be looking lower. If you were 3 feet taller, I'd be looking taller. So when there's nobody on stage and you're imagining that you're speaking to that person, you have to envision the height of the person that you're speaking to. So Jimmy Stewart is the tallest person in Bedford Falls. So he looks slightly down when he talks to Mary Hatch, his wife. Then he looks a little bit farther down when he talks to Pete, which is his oldest son. A little bit farther down for Janie, a little bit farther down for Tommy, and all the way down for Zuzu. And if you're playing one of those characters, then you have to remember which height you are in reference to the person that you're speaking to. So if you're Mary speaking to George, it's up just a little bit. But if you're Tommy speaking to George Bailey, Jimmy Stewart, then you have to look all the way up almost to the ceiling. And these changes go snap, 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 snap. You just have to go right from one character to the other. So there's no time to think. It just has to kind of come out of you.
That is so complicated.
Yeah.
I can't imagine handling it.
Yeah.
Well, there's one scene where Larry actually talks to, he's George Bailey, but he talks to all four of his children and plays the piano and plays Donna Reed.
Uh-huh.
And I saw this in action. And then he told me that he was going to a chiropractor. And I said, I know why. You don't have to tell me.
Oh, no. The movie, it's a holiday classic, obviously. It means Christmas to a lot of people. I watch it with my parents almost every year. And every year, I am stressed out in the beginning parts of the movie because I want George Bailey to leave town.
Mm-hmm.
I want him to go and like live his dream, and everybody will probably be okay if he could just get out. Do you, when you're playing George, have that same stress in the beginning of the story?
Well, you have to have that stress all the way through.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, every character that you ever play, the most important thing you ask yourself is, what is my objective? What do I want? And George wants to get out of town, but it's not until the end of the story that he realizes that being in Bedford Falls is not a penance.
Right.
Penance, it's a privilege.
Mm-hmm.
His life would have been, well, it would have been vastly different, but there's no way to say that it would have been better. It probably would have been a lot worse. He would not have had his family, or he would have had a completely different family and a completely different life. And I'm not sure that he would have been happier after all. I mean, the grass is always greener. That's part of life. We always think, if only I had
right.
X, Y, or Z.
Mm-hmm.
But for George, because of this film, because of what happens when he gets his wish that he was never born, he's actually able to see it in front of his own eyes. And for Frank Capra, he said this was his favorite film because it shows the importance of the individual. And for him, that was what all of his films were about, but this one most especially, because it shows how you would have changed not only your own life, but everybody else's life around you if that one person had not been there.
Maggie, what do you like, or what is different or special, or however you want to take it, I guess, about directing a one-person show, directing just one actor in a production?
That's a very interesting question. Thanks for asking it. First of all, you have to really have a connection with the actor. And if you don't, it's a much bigger problem than in a play when you have 26 people on your stage. You have to have a very similar vocabulary. And frankly, I know this sounds kind of corny in the theater business, but there is a trust factor. You have to trust each other. I have to trust Larry. And he has to trust me. And frankly, one of the things he had to trust me with was when I said, no, we're not going to rehearse for 8 hours. We're not. Because I love your voice. I want your voice to be strong. I want you to be strong. And I'm seeing signs of tiredness in you. And now you have to go away and rest. He is the hardest working actor I've ever worked with. But I think it's really your communication has to be really spot on. And if you're not understanding each other, you have to work it out. It's a little bit like a short-term marriage,
mm-hmm.
maybe a long-term yeah. marriage for some people, but a short-term marriage,
yeah.
you know,
yeah.
that you are really intensely involved for intense periods of time over, you know, 8 to 10 weeks. And then we get to go and say goodbye. With love in our heart.
Do you have anything to add to the?
No.
Okay. The commentary on there on your miniature yeah. marriage.
How... I'm sorry, Larry.
No, don't be no, sorry.
I don't think you said anything to apologize for. But I don't know. I'm not in this relationship.
Well, with any actor-director relationship, you have to have trust, because particularly with this piece, There are so many thousands of little tiny details. Every time I open my mouth, I'm looking a different direction, my body's different, my voice is different. I don't have time. I can't possibly see the whole arc of the piece. So you really need somebody on the outside who sees thematically what's going on and can say to me, you really need to slow down in this part because you're not, the part of the story is not clear here. Or this part needs to speed up because we've already covered this in the past. Or this character needs to be a little clearer in this way. You can't see it because you're right in the middle of the forest, you mm-hmm. know, and you yeah. can't, like the old phrase, you can't see the forest for the trees. You know, she can see the forest. I only see the trees right in front of me. So it's extremely important, especially in a one-person show, because you have so much responsibility on yourself that you need that outside eye to give it shape.
Are you a person in your personal life, this isn't very personal, don't get worried, who enjoys the holidays?
It depends. It depends on if I'm working.
Right.
Can I tell you that?
Mm-hmm.
For actors, particularly if you live in New York and you're a professional actor, I've done a lot of shows where the show closes either the day before or 2 days before Christmas, and you get back, and there's no auditions for 3 or 4 weeks because that's the deadest time of year. And all your other friends are in the same sort of situation, and most of them go home to see their family, and I don't have any family. So as far as enjoying holidays, usually I'm at home watching TV. So that's it.
Because I was wondering why I asked the question is you're working very hard, as mm-hmm. we established, to bring holiday cheer, to tell this classic story to audiences.
Yeah.
But you're working very hard and not getting to just enjoy tinsel and lights.
People become actors for a number of reasons. Some of them I think are not very good reasons, like the glamour or the money. For me, because there is no glamour, there is no money most of the time, but for me, it's all about reaching the audience. That's why on those nights when I'm able to get out of costume fast enough and get out into the house and there's still a few people left and they come up to me and they talk about their experience, to me, that is gold because I feel like I've made some sort of difference in their lives. I mean, I did this show last year, and there was a woman who hadn't left the house in 6 months because her husband had died. Mm-hmm. And this was the first time she left, and she came up to me crying, and she said, I felt my husband's spirit speaking through you. So for me, that's how you get paid. So like I said, some other people are actors for a number of reasons that are not the greatest. But for me, that's why I'm in this. So that's how I enjoy the holiday season, particularly if I'm doing a holiday show, is I feel like I've really made that connection, that I've changed people's lives. Sort of like George Bailey in the story. You feel like you've made a difference, which is the theme of the movie.
Thank you both so much for coming in. I can't wait to see the show.
Thank you,
Thank
Sarah.
You.
This Wonderful Life, starring Larry Daggett and directed by Maggie Mancinelli Cahill, runs at Capitol Rep in Albany through December 22nd. For ticket and showtime information, visit capitalrep.org. That's CAPITALREP.org. CapitalRep.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.